You're listening to episode 7 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. Hi guys, this is a temporary placeholder for the perfect sponsor. I'm excited to partner with a company that I genuinely believe in and stand firmly by their message and products. If you're interested in sponsoring my show and you believe your brand can truly be of value and of service to me and my tribe, reach out to me on my contact page at 88cupsoftea.com and let's chat.
Hey everyone, I'm so excited to have Leah Meyerhoff with us today. She wrote and directed her debut feature film, I Believe in Unicorns, that premiered at South by Southwest. Her film is one of the most grounded, heartfelt, and genuine coming-of-age stories that I've ever seen. Welcome to 88 Cups of Tea, Leah.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk.
I know you're a strong advocate for women in filmmaking. I'd love to touch on that and also how you came into filmmaking.
Okay. Well, I have always been a storyteller and an artist of some sort, and I came into filmmaking really through photography. So I was in art school studying photography and realized that film was such a natural combination of the creative visual elements that I loved in photography and also a kind of social justice component. I think storytelling and cinema in particular can have a larger impact on the world. So like you mentioned, I'm really passionate about women and women's stories. I wanted to make I Believe in Unicorns to tell the story of a girl that I haven't seen before on screen. When I was growing up, there weren't that many films that had female protagonists on screen that I related to. And I would say even today, there are not enough female characters in movies. And so I was inspired to write the script for I Believe in Unicorns about a 16-year-old girl running away from home with an older boy and the magical journey that she embarks upon. It's been just a wonderful experience ever since.
Was it autobiographical?
Portions of the script are quite personal, and then other parts are completely fictional. When I was writing the script, I really drew upon memories from my own time as a 16-year-old girl, and then I also collaborated quite closely with our lead actress. Her name's Natalia Dyer, and she was 16 at the time that we made the movie. She was a junior in high school, and so it was really a close collaboration on the character to stay true and honest to my experiences and as a woman, and also hers as a 16-year-old girl. I would say the most personal elements of this film are the backstory of the main character. So the mother character in the film is actually played by my own mother in real life. And I grew up in a bit of an unusual circumstance in that my mother has multiple sclerosis and she's disabled. And she's been in a wheelchair for as long as I can remember. And I grew up when I was a little girl taking care of her. So when I was writing the script, that just naturally worked its way into the story, which led to the decision to cast my mother in the film. We actually went out to San Francisco, California, where she lives, and filmed in her house using a lot of other locations that I remember when I was growing up. So that's the autobiographical component. And then the rest of the film is a combination of stories of people I know, other teenage girls that I mentor or have taught. You know, I teach high school and college level as well. And then, like I mentioned, experiences that came from our lead actress, who is a teenage girl at the time we made the movie.
That scene where Davina pulled her mom up onto the wheelchair was so heartbreaking. Oh my gosh, that I felt like that totally ripped my heart out. Do you remember the shot that I'm talking about?
Absolutely, yeah.
Why did you choose to shoot it that way specifically? I mean, if you were trying to get to the point of allowing the audiences to understand the hardship that Davina was going through, like I felt it for sure.
That was the intention. I wanted to choose a moment that really clarified what happens when you have this role reversal of a mother-daughter, when you have the child be the caretaker in the home, the kind of anger and resentment that can come from that. You know, often teenage girls, or just teenagers in general, can be selfish and self-centered and resentful of their parents. And when you add to that an experience where the teenager is also acting like the parent in the household, kind of against their will, still, I think there's a lot of emotion that comes to the surface there. I wrote that scene to really show that here is a girl who has grown up in these difficult circumstances and is looking for a way out and is looking for an escape. And yet at the same time, has empathy for her mother and she's a good person in a really difficult situation.
Was it difficult to shoot that specific scene with your mom?
It was very emotional for me and probably also for my mom. When I was making this feature film, I knew that I was going to be casting a 16-year-old girl and I knew I was going to be casting my mom. And those are both risky casting decisions. You know, just working with non-professional actors is a risk in of itself and working with a family member even more so. So one thing that I did is I actually made a short film before I made the feature film as a way of trying out some of these ideas. And in that short film, I also cast a teenage girl and my mom. I shot a kind of test of that exact same scene in film. And that experience showed me that on a personal level, it was going to work. It actually brought me and my mom closer together in real life in a really beautiful way. On a professional level, making a short film showed me that the feature film could be successful. That short film won a Student Academy Award and went to dozens of film festivals. And I put together the team that ended up making the feature film with me while I was traveling around to film festivals with the short film. So that's advice I give aspiring filmmakers all the time is while you're developing your feature film, which can take years, it's always a great idea to try and make a short film in the meantime that is in some way related to the feature, maybe a similar character or location or theme. It can be really rewarding creatively and also kickstart the making of the feature film.
That's fantastic advice. What was the most difficult scene with Davina that challenged you as a director? Because I know there's some scenes in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, this girl probably is under 18. Because you know, there's most coming of age dramas where they cast people who are over 18 playing 14 or 15, you know?
Yeah, that's what happens in Hollywood. And in this film, I was working with an actual 16-year-old actress. And that was something also going in, I knew would be challenging and also incredibly rewarding. In the same way that casting my mom in the role of a disabled mother brought authenticity to the film, working with an actual 16-year-old actress brought a real level of honesty and truth. And Natalia Dyer was so brave. And this was her first feature film as well. And we really were like sisters in the making of this film. Came so close. I care about her so much. I think the most challenging scenes, there are a couple that come to mind. The sex scenes in the film. I mean, there are intimate scenes in the film, which is challenging for any actress. In this case, I had to be very careful and make sure that we did everything properly and legally and so forth. But more importantly, that I was sensitive to her boundaries and making sure that she felt safe and comfortable at all times. So when we were shooting a scene, for example, the first time that Davina and Sterling go back to his place and make out, we shot that with as few people in the room as possible. It would be me and the camera and the sound, the two actors, and then her mom. Her mom was on set at all times. I really just didn't rehearse too much. I would explain the dynamics of what the scene was and what was going on for each character, and then I would just let her lead the way. I would let her find her way in the scene, and then when she was finished, we would say cut. So it was a very kind of organic, almost documentary-like way of filming.
For, let's say, the listeners who are working on short films right now, or even their first feature films, and let's say they're going to encounter a scene or a situation where they're giving their main actors a certain direction, but it's not really going the way they want it to, how would you advise them to communicate with the actors to direct them a different way? How would you go about it sensitively and respectfully towards the actors without making them feel uncomfortable?
I think the best way to communicate with actors is to explain to them what is going on in the mind of the character at that time. And if you're working with a non-professional actor, then it's often really helpful to ask them to find something, their own lives or their own experience that they can bring to the set. For a scene with Davina where I wanted her to be crying. Instead of telling her, okay, in this scene you need to cry, I would say, I want you to think about something sad from your life. Maybe it's when your dog died or, you know, whatever it could be. And go sit in the corner and just think about that for 5 minutes and kind of get into that emotional space. And then we'll start the scene. So it's really a way of communicating towards the emotional truth and the core of what you want the character to be feeling in that moment, rather than telling them what results you're looking for. Once you start start telling an actor, I need you to be smiling more or looking sexier, that doesn't really work. It's a hard thing for an actor to do. But if you tell them, I want you to think about this, which will lead them to feel the thing you want them to feel, then those emotions will come through on their face in a really honest, organic, and subtle way. You know, I think acting is one of the most difficult jobs in this industry. Actors are incredibly vulnerable and brave, and they really need to trust the director and trust that they're going to be safe and that'll allow them to take risks. And so the best thing that a director can do is make a really emotionally safe environment for the actors to do their best work. And if they still are having trouble getting what you want, then maybe you should try, you know, moving the scene in a different direction. If there's something that really isn't working, then maybe the script isn't working. Maybe that moment actually isn't a realistic moment for the character. You know, I think it's a real collaborative effort, and I place a lot of trust in my actors.
There was a sex scene in the barnyard.
Yeah.
And yeah, when you mentioned just now that her mom was on set the entire time, like, I would be so nervous. Like,
I'm glad it's not her dad.
I know, right? Oh my goodness.
I mean, that was the most, I guess, graphic sex scene in the film.
Yeah, and I can't believe you're saying this is her first time.
It was her first feature. She's incredibly talented. And she was, again, it goes back to that level of trust. She was so trusting and so brave and just willing to go there. And she really was feeling a lot of those feelings. And it just comes through in the most heartbreaking, touching way. That scene in particular, we knew that was going to be one of the hardest scenes in the film. Left that till the very end of the schedule. We actually shot the film as much as we could in chronological order so that in many ways, the characters really were falling in love in real life as they were on screen. By the time we got to that scene, we had already gone through so much together as a crew and as a team that that one was actually somewhat easy to film. We just did it in one long single take. And I just said, okay, guys, like, this is what's going on here. Just go with it. We filmed it with just a single fluid handheld camera so that I didn't need to make them do it over and over and over again.
Oh my gosh. Props to you. That says a lot about you as a director too.
To be honest, I think it's also helpful, especially for the more intimate scenes, that I'm a female director and this film is coming from a personal place and that it's vulnerable for me as well. And by me bringing my own vulnerability and honesty to the set, I think it's very different than, you know, you see some of these other movies where you have this kind of older, straight, white male director trying to 16-year-old girl in a sex scene, and it's creepy and weird. And I think me bringing my own experiences to this film made it also a safe emotional space.
For the fantasy scenes, I loved how you were so experimental. What made you choose stop motion?
Yeah, so basically, I believe in unicorns as telling the story of this dreamy, imaginative, intelligent, complicated teenage girl. And I wanted to tell the story as subjectively as possible. As much as we can, I wanted the audience to feel like they're really in Davina's mind and experiencing her journey along with her. And that includes these kind of fantastical fantasy sequences. And all of the aesthetic decisions in the film were really made with that in mind. I wanted the fantasy sequences to feel like they could have been created by this girl, almost like you can see her fingerprints on the edges of the frame. Like, this is a world she could have built in her own mind. And so we filmed on super 16 millimeter film and also some super 8 millimeter film. So the entire movie was shot on celluloid, and the most intimate fantasy sequences were done with stop motion puppet animation on 16 millimeter film, which is a very difficult, tedious, laborious thing to do. And this was my first feature film and my first attempt animating. I made a lot of naive mistakes. I didn't know better. I said, oh, well, we need to shoot this on film. And now that it all is said and done, I realize it probably would have been a lot easier to just shoot it on a 5D or something digitally and do it all in post-production. But at the time, I was like, well, this is what we're doing. We've shot everything else on film. We still have this camera and we have leftover film. Let's do some animation. And it was a real adventure. We basically built a miniature world with trees and dirt and puppets. And we set up a giant film camera and all of these lights. A team of us would just move the puppets 1 inch at a time and take a frame of film, and then move them another inch and take a frame of film over and over and over again. And then send that roll of film off to the lab and get it back and see what we got. So it was a real kind of leap of faith, some of the animation, but I'm so happy with how it turned out. about. I think it really goes along with the aesthetic of this raw, gritty, textured, handcrafted world that feels true to the mind of a teenage girl.
If you had the chance to do it all over again, would you do anything differently?
I might, specifically for the fantasy sequences and the animation, I may have attempted to do those with a different camera digitally. Make our life a lot easier. Or I would have recruited more help or had more time. So that was, I think, the most challenging, was the nature of stop motion animation is it's incredibly time consuming, which is why when you look at movies like Tim Burton's films or Fantastic Mr. Fox or some of these Hollywood movies, they have hundreds of millions of dollars and a giant crew, and it still takes them 5 years to make the movie. So I think that was my naive mistake, was thinking I could achieve the amount of animation that I wanted in the short amount of time that we had. So if I was going to go back and do it again, I would have probably gone about that differently. But, you know, there's really no regrets. Like, the mistakes are still happy accidents. And some of the things that may look like a mistake are actually some of my favorite. They feel honest and real.
Was the animation part in your film, did that take a lot of your budget?
Actually, you know, surprisingly, it did not. But that's because we did it in a very lo-fi way. We had only one main animator. And then the rest of the crew were mostly friends of mine from film school and people volunteering their time. Our film camera was donated from a cinematography teacher from NYU, and all of our film stock was donated from Fuji. So we were able to achieve the animation on a very limited budget, but it took a long time. I would say it probably took about 2 months to make what ends up being maybe 10 minutes of animation in the film. So, you know, in terms of the ratio of the amount of time on set to how much we ended up getting, it was very high because limited resources.
It's always scary to think about the finance part. How would you advise to go about financing the short film or feature film through your experiences with I Believe in Unicorns or even past short films?
Yeah, I think financing can really be the biggest challenge for all filmmakers, and especially for female filmmakers. There just aren't that many opportunities to finance independent films, especially if it's your first film, whether it's your short film or your feature. As far as my experience, the advice I gave earlier of making a short film first is still good advice, in that I made a 10-minute short film. I think I spent less than $7,000, and I shot that on 16-millimeter film. I cast a teenage girl. I cast my mom, so no famous actors or anything. And that short film went to almost 100 film festivals. It won all kinds of prizes, and I sold it to IFC and to some television stations in Scandinavia, of all places. And I actually made my budget back. I think we made around $25,000 from selling that short film. And so by doing that experience taught me a lot about how much you can do with limited resources and how using limited resources can actually help you be more creative. And okay, I don't have hundreds of millions of dollars and a giant crew, so how can I do this animation myself with a limited amount of time? And also, it was useful to show investors for the feature film, hey, I did this with a short film, this 10-minute short. If we just multiply that by 10 and scale it up, we can do the same thing with the feature film. It also helps to have a short film to just show people your style and what you're going for and give people something to look at. People like to have an idea of what the final product is going to be before they invest their money. And so again, making that short can be incredibly beneficial. And then for Unicorns, I applied to every grant program, every filmmaker lab. There are a lot of resources out there for first-time directors and also for women and for people of color. I mean, there are all kinds of organizations out there to support filmmakers. In particular, I was lucky enough to receive a grant from the Independent Feature Project, IFP, as well as the Tribeca Film Institute, as well as the Adrian Shelley Foundation, San Francisco Film Society. I also got a grant from NYU, where I went to film school. So I was able to piece together a good amount of grant money, as well as did a crowdfunding. I did a Kickstarter towards the end, coupled with private equity that was found mostly through my producer and the previous success of her previous films. So I think my biggest advice is, if you're making your first short film or your first feature film, first figure out what you can do with the resources you have on hand. So try and make a project as cheaply as possible and write a script that only has a few characters or is in one location, or, you know, really use those limitations to spark your creativity. And then look for money all the ways you can think of. And in the meantime, just keep moving forward creatively with making the film. I think what often happens is filmmakers will will run up against that wall of financing and say, I'm never going to get the millions of dollars I think I need to make this film, or even $10,000, whatever the number may be. And they just kind of give up and put it on the back burner. And I think that's just a tragedy. And it's much more important to make something, even if it's not perfect, than to not make anything at all. With I Believe in Unicorns, we started filming before I even had all of the budget in the bank account. We just moved forward. And as soon as we did, the project picks up momentum and people realize that this is a film that's actually happening, is going to be made. And people come out of the woodwork to help out, to invest their time and their money and help you finish the film. So that's my other piece of advice, is whatever resources people have on hand, to just start shooting.
Is Kickstarter a route that you avoided?
It was something that I waited to do until after I had finished the film. So I did do a Kickstarter campaign, but I did it for our festival release. I used the Kickstarter funds to finish the film, to pay for our color correction and some of the festival costs. And the reason that I waited is because, just doing a Kickstarter, any kind of crowdfunding campaign, can be creatively exhausting. It's only work. And so I just didn't want to completely exhaust my resources. I was like, I'm going to focus on making the film the best I can, and then I'll take a break, I'll take a breath, and then I'll do a crowdfunding campaign. So that's the way I choose to do it. And if people can wait, I also think it's a great idea, because a crowdfunding campaign can be really helpful with publicity. And you want to wait until your film is actually in theaters or in festivals where people can see it, because everyone's talking about it when it's on Kickstarter. You get a lot of press and a lot of people on social media. So if you can wait till you're closer to being finished with the film, it's better for the marketing. I mean, people need that money up front. So people often do it right in the beginning as well. So it's really different project to project.
For those out there who are not familiar with grants, did you have a mentor to guide you in writing these grant proposals?
In many ways, I learned by doing, but I will say, in addition to being a filmmaker, I also founded a film collective of women directors. It's called Film Fatales. It is a community of what is now hundreds of women feature directors who get together every month in each other's homes to collaborate on projects and share resources and give each other advice and mentor each other. So as I was making I Believe in Unicorns, I felt very much alone. I was out of film school and I was trying to make this feature and was overwhelmed. Being a woman in this industry, you're up against a specific set of challenges and opportunities, but especially challenges. And so I created that community. I reached out to other female directors that I knew and I said, I need help. I'm making my first feature film. Can I buy you coffee? Can I make you dinner? And they were so generous with their advice and their knowledge that it ended up becoming this larger organization. It started off where I invited five other filmmakers over to my house and I made them dinner one night. And it was so helpful that at the end of that dinner, another one said, let's do this next month. I'll host it at my place. And then the next month, someone else hosted it. And it began as this rotating dinner party format and has now turned into this formal organization with dozens of women meeting every month together to share knowledge. For those female directors out there who are far and few between, we're like unicorns, I would recommend looking up Film Fatales. And our website is filmfatalesnyc.com. If there is a local chapter in their area, they can email from that website and join. It's a great peer mentoring program, mostly focused around narrative feature directors, but we do have some groups specifically for documentary filmmakers as well as short filmmakers. That's one route to go in. For those who are not women directors, building a community of any kind is incredibly helpful. Filmmaking is a collaborative art form. You can't do it alone. So just getting together with a few other friends and saying, hey, if you help me produce my film, I'll help you produce yours. If you help me write this grant, I'll make your website. Or a kind of bartering system of really sharing knowledge can go a long way. Specifically for writing the grant applications, I just started doing it. I looked up their website. Sundance Film Festival has a lot listed on their website. The Tribeca Film Institute has a list of grants, as does IFP, which is an organization in New York. In LA, there's Film Independence. I mean, there are a lot of resources out there. And I just started writing grant applications and I got denied more times than I got accepted. So that's another piece of advice, is just keep trying and trying and trying, and eventually something might stick. But it was helpful because writing grant proposals makes you clarify what type of film you you want to make and why you're making it and why it deserves to be funded. Even if you don't receive the grant, the process of applying and having to write down your synopsis and your storyline and make a budget and really figure out how you're going to film, all of that is worthwhile.
When you mentioned about your short film, that you were actually able to sell it and actually make money back, you pitched it and sold it. Was that something that you thought like, okay, let me just try this and try my luck?
It's something I organically figured it out as I was doing it. So I was in film school at the time. I was at NYU and I actually financed that short film. It's called Twitch. I financed it in an unusual way in that I was the subject of a documentary series on IFC on cable television called Film School, which was a kind of reality TV show about NYU film students making short films. I was approached by the executive producer of the show and said, I heard about your script and what you're making. We'd love to profile you. And I said, okay. And I ended up being on this TV show and they then financed the short film. The budget was, I think it was around $7,000. It was less than $10,000. I'm not remembering. It was a while ago. But they paid for the film. And then in return, they also documented the making of the short film and used it for their documentary series. And then once the film was made, I then had a connection to IFC and was able to sell the film to them through this documentary crew. And I also submitted the film to as many film festivals as I could. That's my other piece of advice, is the film festival circuit is a wonderful community of independent filmmakers, people out there who want to support independent film. A lot of film festivals have prize money for short films, or they have grant programs for feature films, or they have writing labs or directing labs. There are a lot of resources through the independent film festival circuit. So with this short film, I started at Slamdance, where it won a grand jury prize. And then I went to a festival in France called Clermont-Ferrand, which is just for short films, also a fantastic festival. And then it just traveled around to dozens, almost 100 film festivals. And I didn't always go to each one. I only would go if they could pay for my flight or my hotel. When I would go, I'd be at the short film festival with my short film. And anytime I would do a Q&A with the audience, I would say, I'm working on a feature film. I'm raising money for it. If anyone is interested in hearing more, come talk to me afterwards. And I actually found my very first investor that way in Sarasota, Florida, a little community of mostly retired people who just love supporting the arts. And I met this really sweet gentleman who loved my short film and said, I'd like to be involved in your feature film. You know, where can I write the check? And I was like, wow, amazing. A stranger wants to give me money. You know, again, it's through that festival circuit, I either would win prize money or meet people who then ended up becoming involved in the feature film. I spent about a year with that short film playing in film festivals. Some of those film festivals then reached out to me and said, we have a distribution company who saw your short film and is interested in buying it. It kind of came to me. You know, I sold the film to Scandinavian Television because it was in a film festival in Denmark. And the festival programmer said, we're putting together a selection of short films for our local cable television channel. They are interested in licensing your film. Or I'd be on a DVD compilation, you know, the best of Slamdance, and they would do 10 short films from their festival and I could monetize it that way. I started to realize that there is a market for short films, especially if you get together and make a compilation of a selection of 5 or 6 short films. So it's almost like an omnibus feature film. But again, that's an unusual path. It doesn't work for everyone. Regardless of whether it's possible to sell your short film, it's definitely worthwhile to submit your film to film festivals because that's why we're here. That's why we're making films, is we want them to get seen. And with short films in particular, film festivals are often the best route for an audience to see your film and be introduced to your work as a filmmaker.
I'm like sitting here with my jaw dropped. Gosh, Leah is so freaking resourceful and so clever.
Oh, well, thank you.
Where can our listeners find you?
The best way for people to view I Believe in Unicorns is through our website, which is ibelieveinunicorns.com. And on the website, there is a page of screenings, which shows all of the screening times in local theaters. They're download the film directly through Vimeo or stream the film and watch it on our website. So I think that's most likely the best way for listeners to check out the film.
And they can find you on Twitter and Facebook to say hi.
Yep. So I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm all over social media, and so are the unicorns.
What is one recommended book that you love that has helped you in your filmmaking career?
It's a book by Christine Vachon. It's a book of interviews with first-time feature filmmakers. And it's a bit older, but I remember it being incredibly helpful, which is lots of real-world tips. So it's by Christine Vachon from Killer Films, her first book.
You were so incredibly generous and inspiring, and I thank you for that. I hope you have an amazing rest of your week. And thank you again, Leah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe, how incredibly motivating and inspiring was Leah's episode? She gave so many takeaways for you to apply to your own filmmaking projects. Many, many thanks to Leah for sharing her personal journey and for being so generous with all of her career advice. Please say hi to Leah over on Twitter or Facebook and find her at Leah Meyerhoff. That's LEAHMEYERHOFF. To watch Leah's movie, I Believe in Unicorns, or to keep up with the movie's latest updates on social media, and there's a lot happening with the movie, by the way, be sure to head over to IBelieveInUnicorns.com. For links to the books and all the resources that were brought up in Leah's interview, be sure to head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Leah Meyerhoff. And as always, it would make my day to hear how this episode has helped you in any way. So head on over to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and find me at 88 Cups of Tea. If you did find this episode helpful in any way, please leave a rating and review on my podcast's iTunes page. Thank you so much in advance for helping me out. And last but not least, thank you again, Storyteller Tribe, for listening in and joining me on this journey.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!